I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. Joining us today is John L. Monk, indie fiction extraordinaire. John is the best-selling author of the popular YA post-apocalyptic tale Hell's Children, as well as the Jenkins Cycle series, and he has co-written with the likes of Jay Fawn, is a proactive advocate for indie authors, and most importantly, is one hell of a swell guy. How's it going, John?
I'm doing really good. How are you guys?
Yeah, too bad. Sorry, yeah, Dan, I forgot to introduce us.
I think people should know us by now, to be fair.
Yeah, sometimes you're Ben, so like sometimes it switches out. But
And cool. Also, I hate introducing myself as my own name because I feel like you rarely have to say your own name.
I say it all the time.
Yeah. When you wake up in the morning, good morning, Luke Condor.
Yeah. No one else will. Okay, so how's it going, guys? What are you working on? What are you creating? What are you doing, John? What are you working on?
As little as possible. I'm actually writing, finishing the second book after Hell's Children. Hell's Children did really well, so I figured I might as well try to see if I could catch that lightning in a bottle twice. And I'm sitting at around 81,000 words. My target was 80, but you know, it's going to go over a little bit because I gotta not rush the ending, as it were. So that's what I'm doing right now.
What are you?
Endings are tricky.
Yeah. Have you got a title for the sequel?
I do. It's so the first book one is Hell's Children, kind of like the Pat Benatar song, I know. And the second one is Hell's Encore, which is really cool.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I thought you were going to give like Hell's Teenagers or something. But then again, I guess you could only go...
It's only been 3 months.
Yeah.
It's only been 3 months in the book, so they can't be... Well, they are actually teenagers. It's funny. They're the main characters are 14, 15 years old. So
yeah.
Young teenagers.
We call them tweenagers in England. I don't know if it's the same in the US.
Yeah, but you guys are weird. So
we are quite weird.
No argument there, yeah.
What about you, Dan? What have you been up to?
I have just been cracking on with Lazarus, getting close to the end, which is glorious. I think I'm similar to you at the minute, John. I'm in that final part where it's coming together. We've got all the action at the end, and I'm trying to ease it into the finish and then the resolve so that we can lead on to the second book, because originally the book was planned to be about 50,000 words, 60,000 words, and is now cracking out at about 100,000. And with a book that length that is the first of a series, I don't really want to rush the ending and kind of leave people shortchanged.
You're not going to rush the ending on a 100,000 word book. That's
the ending, wow. Probably about 20,000 words, to be fair.
Yeah, you won't be rushing that ending, I don't think, anytime soon.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
No, I'm hoping it'll be okay for the handover. I'm hoping to hand it over to you, Luke, this coming week. So.
Okay, cool. I'm looking forward to diving into that tome.
And what are you working on?
So, February's over, and February was like a really crazy busy month, and I've just decided
By the time this launches, February will be well over.
It will, yeah. But like February's so busy, so we did like 50,000 words, we did the Kickstarter campaign, we launched our book, I turned 29, and we launched a new podcast, and I was like, I just want to take a couple of days just to sort of... recover and just chill for a bit, but I've still not managed to like switch my mind off. I'm still sort of waking up quite early, still feeling like I should be doing something, feeling kind of guilty for not doing much. But I've just been reading. That's all I've been doing, reading books and comics and stuff, which is quite nice.
What have you been reading?
I've
been reading, you won't be able to see it on the podcast, but Junji Ito's Fragments of Horror, which is like a creepy little manga thing. And I've been reading a Clive Barker book, The Damnation Game, which has been great. I've really enjoyed it.
I tried reading Damnation Game years ago when I was too young to read books like that. And this is kind of an old book, and I couldn't get into it, but I think I'm going to go back to it. A book I would recommend if you like horror, though, is a book by another fellow indie, Harvey Click. It's called The Bad Box. I've actually read all of his stuff. He's got like maybe five or six books, and he's even got a bunch of short stories. I mean, I would wait out in the rain for this guy. If he had been ever traditionally published back in the 80s or whatever, you would know his name along with Stephen King, Clive Barker, and all those guys. He's
Harvey Click.
Yeah, he's cool. He's truly, truly amazing. I hate to turn this into a Harvey Click commercial, but I just wanted to share.
No, it's cool.
Sponsored by.
Yeah, I'm just recently sort
of.
I'm just recently digging into all those sort of horror guys from like the 80s. So I want to read like a Ramsey Campbell book, and I want to sort of, you know, dig into those sort of authors. I mean, Stephen King, me and Dan are. Like, Dan, you read Stephen King anyway, but I don't really, so I'm just trying to catch up on all that stuff I should have read.
Still
really.
A lot to get through, though. There's still quite a few on my list that I want to hit. But I am, I've actually been on Clive Barker this week.
Have you?
Book of Blood.
Yeah.
Volume 1. Because you recommended that in the two, Midnight Meat Train and...
In the Hills of the Cities.
I read that one, and then kind of just went on with the rest of the book, and I've just finished, I think it's called The Pig Blood Blues.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ. that's a story and a half.
Clive Barker's got a really amazing poetic way of describing gore. I don't think I've ever read anything like that, but I'm trying to do that a bit myself, but I can't like ape that style too much because it just comes off like pastiche.
I feel like it's the kind of stuff that I write and then I'm like, no, this will come across as too pretentious. People will hate me.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you a Clive Barker fan, John, generally? Or
I've only read some of the Damnation Game. Sure. I do want to, you know, like you make me want to read even more. Like, I don't like gore.
Yeah.
It's not interesting to me, but a poetic way of writing gore,
yeah,
that I got to see. I got to see that.
I definitely recommend Books of Blood, which is just the short stories, but they're a lot more concise. I feel like after reading those and then going to the Damnation Game, he definitely waffles on a bit more in in the Damnation Game. So, definitely recommend the short stories.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. Let's crack on to our big whoops for the week. So what have you guys been reading, watching, playing? What have you been up to, John?
I'm on the spot. Okay, so I pretty much perennially, daily, weekly kind of watch the same old stuff on Netflix right before bed. It's usually the IT Crowd. Have you ever watched that?
Yeah, I'm a big IT Crowd.
I haven't, yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
I love that show. I can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
But books, I'm reading a little Robert B. Parker. If you haven't read Robert B. Parker, you should read his Spencer series. Mm. You want to know how to write good dialogue. You want to know how to write the words that aren't there, the spaces between the words kind of thing. Pick up Robert B. Parker. He is a direct inspiration for Jim Butcher, if you like Jim Butcher. So he writes a series of books called Spencer. I flipped through that. I was reading and I sort of am kind of going through a get inspired to finish my own book because I read books to get inspired to write my books.
Yeah.
I see a bunch of really good writing. I feel like I walked out of a Rocky movie and I want to just go boxing, but I do it with books. So I was reading Nathan Lowell's Quarter Share. I've read it before. I was reading Modisett Jr., his Imgur Portfolio first book. This is all within like the first week. Now, I don't really finish these books that I'm rereading and stuff. I just sort of read them to kind of get inspired by the words and stuff. Yeah. Highly recommend it. It gets you get that cadence and rhythm down.
Yeah, I think I have to agree. So last year, I didn't really read that much fiction. Well, I read some fiction, but I read a lot of prose. I mean, sorry, a lot of nonfiction even. And I just, this year, I decided to make a conscious effort to read a lot more prose. And I'm feeling so much more inspired to actually sit down and write and try new things out in the fiction. But yeah, I'd love to. I agree. What about you, Dan? What's your big whip?
My big whip is a bit of a different one. It's more of a personal thing. I'm doing Lent for the first time ever. Because I've had friends over the years that have given up different things and felt better for the experience. And there's one thing that's kind of been, in a way, I guess, dragging me down for a good couple of years. And one thing that I'm consciously been trying to cut down on that just hasn't been happening, which is social media and mobile internet. And just constantly being ticked on the move wherever I go. So I'll wake up and the first thing I'll do is I'll check my phone. I'll go downstairs, have breakfast, and I'll watch YouTube. I'll flick through Instagram, Facebook. I'll listen to a podcast on the way to work. And it's just constantly stuff after stuff after stuff. So what I've actually done is, or what I'm doing for 40 days, is I've uninstalled all the apps on my phone apart from call and text. I only ever have my phone on my person when I'm at work, in my bag on loud, in case I get an important call or a text, because obviously I'm a father, I don't want to like ignore if I'm suddenly needed. So no, I just didn't have a phone. And I'm just living the free life. It's day three now. and honestly, I already feel mentally so much better for it. The first day, because I cycle to work, it's about a 25-minute bike ride, and normally I was like, I'm listening to Joanna Penn, I'm listening to SPP, I'm listening to our other stories, and I was just cycling, and it was a weird experience to just soak in the sunshine, because it was a beautiful day. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, and then a seagull just followed me along as I was cycling and just went along the side, and it's just
you're becoming one with nature. I'm picturing you know, the guy from Into the Wild. I'm just imagining you dying of exposure somewhere.
McCandles, was that it?
Chris McCandles. Yeah. That sounds about right. Yeah,
something like that. Yeah.
But it's been like I said, I'm on day three. I've already had a couple of scenarios where I've suddenly been like, I need to check my bank balance, but I'm not going to do it on my phone. Or someone at work has needed me for something, and normally I'll just check my emails on my phone, but it's a way people know.
Yeah.
So. It's mentally freeing.
But I think it's good. I think I want to try that, but I think maybe not as I don't do it for as long as that. I think I just want to do a week or something. That's about as much as I could hack.
This is 40 days.
Yeah,
I think you could do it. I think you're gonna get a lot out of it. It's funny. So I was sitting right there struggling around 50,000 words with my stupid book, and the one I'm working on right now, and I got so frustrated because all I was doing was looking at stupid current events, watching YouTube videos, going on Facebook, screwing around. And I just got so frustrated because it was so much easier to just go watch other people entertain me than to go fill that role myself, that I put a post on Facebook. It's still there. It's like maybe four or five posts back because I was showing up once in a while to say, hey, I'm at this many words. I put a post saying I'm quitting Facebook until I get my book done. Basically, in my mind, it was until I got 80,000 words, which I said was my target thing. So I recently came back and said, hey, I got my 80,000 words. I'm still working on it, though. But I wasn't on Facebook. And I had all these, like, my numbers were popping up. People were,
you
know, I wasn't checking them or anything. Like, I wasn't replying to anybody. I just came up once in a while to say, hey, I'm at 60,000 words. Hey, I'm at 70. And now I'm at 80. And I'll tell you, it does a lot for your creativity. Or you have to force yourself to do something, you know, rather than having something done for you.
Yeah, I have so much more time in my day because do you know how boring it is to go to the toilet without your phone? it's just...
You on the toilet is not boring.
But I would honestly find that I would just sit and scroll through Facebook and just... Like, it's just mind-numbing, and you don't get anything out of it. So now, if I have a quiet moment, I'm suddenly like, I have to fill this, but I'll do it productively.
Yeah.
Fill what?
I'll fill the time productively.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Well, I might try it. I think I like to try not to check my emails until 11, which isn't quite the same thing, but I mean, it's like at least it's a little bit of a barrier to it. But yeah, I think I'll go social media free at some point. Not for 40 days though, we'll see. So my big whoop is a book I've read that I've been meaning to read for about a year and a half maybe. It's Nick Cole's The Red King.
I read that.
Oh, did you? What did you think to it?
I'm actually friends with him. I thought it was really, really good. I love his work. He's just an amazing writer.
Yeah.
Uh, Yeah. So I also read this other one by him about the end of the world as we knew it. But continue. This is your big book. Sorry.
Taking my big book. No, it's cool. I have got that as well. I just haven't read it yet. But yeah, Nick Cole, like, so last week we had Clark Chamberlain. We were talking about the quality of prose in indie fiction. And I was like, I really sort of am hungry for some really good quality prose. And Nick is such a good writer. Like, I think it's like 240 pages, that book. And I read it in like 3-4 days or so. Just, and I'm a slow reader as well, but he just writes with such
And it's free.
And it's free, yeah. You should go get it, because it's so fluid the way he writes. And I will check out The End of the World as We Know It. That's a different thing, though, right? It's not like a action.
It's a post-apocalyptic zombie novel with a couple of point of views, and absolutely crushes the ending, okay? I mean, you want to talk about, like, you know, you always worry that, oh, it's going to be a real good middle and beginning and stuff, but will it be a good ending? So right away, you'll know it's a good ending. And incidentally, you know, obviously I'm a little bit biased. I'm friends with him, author friends, just like you guys. But we share a podcast together now. It's it's called Science Fiction Writers Playing Old School D&D.
Yeah.
You can probably find that, just do a search for it. And it's a lot of fun. We just play D&D, me and a couple other guys. Chris Porto, you may know him. Some others.
Did Jason and is his name Jason Anspach? Does he do something
like
that?
Yeah, with him. Yeah.
Cool, yeah. Are you doing anything with like the Galaxy's Edge stuff with those guys? Or...
No, I apparently didn't get invited. No, I'm actually, I am doing Tales of the Apocalypse, though, with Chris Porto. I have to write a book about an animal in my world, the Hell's Children world, that is, you know, centered around an animal in some way, because it's what is the apocalypse like for the animals? You know, you know, all the humans are dead and everything. What are the wolves doing? You know, what are the monkeys doing? I don't know.
Oh, I love stuff like that. That kind of stuff is really, really interesting, because no one ever does highlight or pay attention to that side of things.
Yeah. And I loved Watership Down, so I figure if I could write something that good, maybe that's what I need to do to kind of get my juices going, is read a little Watership Down. Mm. You ever read it?
No, I watched the film. I think a lot of English kids did watch the film. Isn't it quite violent, though, Dan? It's like quite gruesome, right?
It's all rabbits getting myxomatosis, right?
It's about crazy. Rabbits. It's about rabbits, and there's like a really mean rabbit, and they got to move from one place to another. And that's all I remember. I just remember thinking it was a really, really good book.
Yeah. So. Imagine that in a post-apocalyptic setting, and it sounds good. Cool.
Radioactive rabbits.
I mean, John, so you're a writer. When did you start writing? Like, you maybe like dip back into when you first put pen to paper, when you decided, okay, this is what I want to do. This is fun.
In first grade, we had a contest to write a poem, and I wrote a poem, and the last line of the poem was "a beautiful spark of love," which was so stupid. You know, kids are dumb. So anyway, I guess they loved it, and they, I mean, it just seems silly to me. I don't know. But because the guys don't write "beautiful spark of love," okay, even first grade guys. So, but that's what I wrote, and I won some stupid contest, and they had a school newspaper for us kids, and so I would write a poem like whatever once a month, and every one of them was just as sappy, and then I got bored with that, and I stopped. And then when I started reading novels by about like fifth grade and stuff, I started basically like rewriting the novels my way, you know, and then taking credit for it.
Yeah.
You know, the short stories. And that was kind of cool. And then somewhere in the seventh and eighth grade, I was like, it'd be really cool to be a writer. So I started writing short stories and submitting them and having them rejected. But I turned 40 after playing a lot of World of Warcraft. I turned 40 and I decided I was really going to write the novel. I was going to take it seriously. I wasn't going to write it halfway and then abandon it. And I was just going to push through, and I didn't care how good it was. And then I, you know, I did that, and here I am today. I've got 5 books, working on a 6th. Yeah.
Do you still play World of Warcraft?
No, I want to, but if I did, I'd have to give up everything.
Yeah. I got like a 7-day free trial and lost that entire week. I didn't do it. And it said, do you want to sign up? And I was like, no, I better not.
I did exactly the same.
Yeah, it's fair.
Do you ever find World of Warcraft in any way influenced how you tell stories or expanded your imagination to write the stories that you do?
If it inspired me in any way, it was in some way that's sort of deeply in the structure of the human brain kind of thing. You spend so much time doing stuff and, you know, either in a game or anything in real life, you're going to be influenced by it. But from a storytelling perspective, something sort of overt that I can put my finger on, like I can tell you if I read Jim Butcher books, I have a new appreciation for, like, you know, like the way a story flows, humor, because he uses a lot of humor. But I never paid attention to the stories in World of Warcraft. I just wanted the gear and the gold, and I wanted to kill monsters. So there's nothing there.
Yeah, the quick fix.
Sorry.
Are you tempted to write in? In fact, you probably should put a beautiful spark of love into one of your post-apocalyptic books somewhere.
No.
It could be one of the poems that one of the kids is writing.
You know, here's the funny thing. Like, you hear a beautiful spark of love and you hear kind of like the derision that I'm heaping upon it. And you're like, what's wrong with this guy? He doesn't like beautiful sparks or love.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I have been embarrassed by that phrase ever since I was pretty much as soon as they started paying attention to it. Even though I wrote the poems for, what do you call it, because I wanted attention, I still knew it was like kind of I got to say it, a girly kind of thing for a guy to say. And I've always felt a little bit, you know, that original shame of writing The Beautiful Spark of Love has always sat with me.
That's just fueled you to write some more hard-hitting stuff.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So you wrote so was the Jenkin Cycle your first series of books?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. And of like any first book, they always say that your first book has like you in it. Like too much you in it and stuff. And that's definitely the case. It's almost like, you know, obviously I don't want to go around killing people because that's what the story is about, a good guy who kills bad guys. Almost like a vigilante, but like Supernatural, he comes back to the life and dead people, or as a bad person. He sort of like, he possesses like serial killers and stuff because he died. He can do that. I mean, so obviously it's not an exact matchup, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. And then you obviously went on and wrote the Hell's Children post-apocalyptic tale. Was there any conscious decision behind genre hopping? Was it something that you'd always sort of doing, or is it very much just I want to write what I want to write?
No, it was a conscious decision because the first series, it being very much from me and very much unschooled as to what's going to sell, nobody types into the Amazon search bar, book about guy who comes back from dead and possesses bad people and brings them to justice and enjoys life at the same time. Nobody writes that, but they're going to write zombie novel, post-apocalyptic novel. Mine's not a zombie novel, but they will write that science fiction novel, spaceships. So post-apoc was sort of an audience. It already had an audience.
Yeah.
That other stuff didn't have an audience. It's getting an audience because people are finding it, but not, I call them lucky people because, ooh, I found it. But other people, you know, like, I mean, it's just never going to be a mass hit, except for maybe as a movie or something, because it would be great for that.
Yeah. I feel like, well, that's pretty much why me and Dan wrote our last book. So it's good to hear that we weren't totally off the mark in doing that. But I was wondering, Kick was the first book of the Jenkin Cycle. So that was your first book you put out there. Were you nervous, like, in terms of, like, the reaction you were going to get from your friends and colleagues and stuff like that?
Oh, I was nervous that people would think that I'm some sort of a suicidal freak because the main character kills himself in the first chapter. Spoiler alert.
did they come to you and say, are you okay, John?
They didn't. I guess they didn't care. Wow, now I'm really depressed. I could really use a beautiful spark of love right now. But
yeah.
Yes, yeah. I was nervous. I was also nervous about the writing. I did a lot of editing post-release of that book. I never got dinged on the editing. Nobody ever said, you don't use your dialogue tags right or anything like that. But, like, I released the book, and there was this stupid thing I used to do with my dialogue where I would do like, he smiled, right? And underneath that, I would have a quotation, how you guys doing? And the idea is he's smiling while he's saying, how you guys doing? And so, like, after, like, maybe the first week or two of the book being released, I was reading some stuff and doing a little bit of work on my craft. And I realized that that's like it's not a good practice. So I went through the book and I fixed all those. And then I went through the book and I like, at some other point, I found all the titles of movies that I had mentioned and I put those in italics, a little, little sort of like style book or whatever things that you do when you're learning. So book one was like a learning book. And right now it's pretty damn polished, you know, cause it's been years and, I learned a lot as I wrote it and rewrote it while I was live. But nobody ever gave me any crap. So I didn't have too many spelling mistakes and things like that. So
yeah, the reviews are crazy. It looks like it's been received really well.
It got received pretty well. I think it's because the people who read it, people are less likely to review something that they didn't finish. Yeah. I think not that it isn't done. But people who finished that, that's the book that they were looking for. They just didn't know it. They got lucky. The lucky people, as I mentioned.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Which is self-serving, I know that, but they find it and they're like, oh wow, you know, this definitely is something different. And I wanted something different. And so they're a little bit more likely to, like, they want to encourage different, because that's what they're looking for. So maybe they're a little bit extra nice in the reviews than maybe they wouldn't be if it was for something a little bit more on genre, like science fiction or something. Science fiction be like, oh, yeah, it's got lasers, whatever.
Yeah.
When you released Kick, obviously that being your first book, was it how long did it take for you to get to a point where you felt like, yeah, this is going somewhere, I'm building an audience? Was there enough feedback from people reading it to keep you wanting to go, or was it for you never a question of having to carry on, wanting to carry on to the next one?
Probably the latter. I knew based on all we all listen to the same podcast, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And basically what you learn as an indie is that you have to write the next book. You have to write the next book. And at the time they were saying series. It's fallen off a little bit, you know, but I knew that I had to have a series if I wanted to be like noticed. And I was like, okay, so book one didn't get too many sales. It got some good reviews, but it didn't get a lot of sales. At book two, I have to write a book two. And I wrote a book two. And I was like, oh, okay, still not knocking it out of the park. I just got to stick to it and write a book three and a book four and a book five. I didn't write book four and five because I realized I needed to write more to market something I liked, but that where people were looking for.
Yeah.
You know, people who make movies, they say you do one for yourself and you do one for them, you know, because you got to pay the bills. You can't just be a starving artist unless you just, you know, want to eat. maybe you're losing weight. You can be a starving artist.
Yeah. So Kick came out and it looks like it got received really well, but obviously didn't get quite like the sales numbers that you were hoping for. And then Hell's Children, which wasn't. It was book one of a potential series, and then that obviously did very well. How did that make you feel to see the moolah coming in?
Well, I don't want to forget that point about the Moolah, but I want to make one correction.
Okay.
When I released it, and as it stands right now, yeah, there's nothing about that book on Amazon sales page that will tell you it's a series.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I've told you it's a series, but if you go there, it's a standalone. Nobody in their right mind would look at that and think it's a series, because it's not, not yet.
It's written in the end of the book, though, isn't it?
It is, but you got to finish the book to figure that out.
I finished the book. Yeah. Fantastic
really?
Book.
Yeah. You're kidding me. You're kidding me.
No, start to finish. It's what I do with my books.
Oh. Well, yeah. I'm intensely flattered. I mean, that's sort of unknown amongst talk show hosts kind of thing. Okay,
no,
back.
No, I'll do my research.
Well, I'm flattered. Okay, so, and I'm also, thank you. I'm glad that you liked it, and thanks for the money. I'm sure I didn't spend it wisely. But the money, when the money started coming, it's an interesting thing. I'll make it quick. But my wife, it was in June. I released it in June 8th. And it was like a week or two later, my wife was diagnosed with cancer, uterine cancer. Hmm. And very survivable. And she's completely cured right now, or I wouldn't even mention it. I would just not mention it. But that book paid for all that. I mean, we have insurance over here, but it's been sort of destroyed. It doesn't, the super high premiums, doesn't cover very much, all that stuff. So we had to pony up about like $17,000. So even with ponying up that kind of money, I still came away with a lot of money to pay for bills and stuff. And she's totally cured. So it's kind of like, I mean, if you're a religious person, you could say sort of like someone was looking out for us. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah, there's not a lot of people that can gather that kind of steam and hit it right at sort of the right moments. That's.
Yeah. I'm impressed. I mean, so is there anything other than writing to market? Is there anything you think that you did that, made the book sell like hotcakes? It sounds like it did.
The cover is pretty hot, to be fair.
It is cool cover. It's very cool cover. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Who did the cover?
Yokla Designs. Mm. There's a lady over there. She absolutely crushes it. She's been making a lot of covers for some of our other friends now. And I think she did, Yesterday's Gone for, Sean Platten, all those guys. Although I forget which one of the three,
David Wright, isn't it?
David Wright and Sean, or Johnny and Sean, you know? Mm-hmm. So one of them, yeah, I can never tell who actually writes their books. Yeah. I just read them. Yeah. Okay. Question, covers, why did it sell? Okay. Well, it was post-apocalyptic, canned audience, and they're voracious. They can't get enough, right? Mm. They're like romance readers without enough like romance books. There's a lot of romance books, you know, but I don't think there's a lot of post-apocalyptic. So I think it's a little bit easy to get into. Now, I could be wrong about that. There certainly is a lot, but the post-apocalyptic crowd keeps up with their homework. They keep up with the books. So I think that it was in that respect. Good cover, yeah. I also used Amazon advertising, which helped maintain sales rank, which helped get me. When you buy sales rank, you know, you're keeping your books visible. It gets advertised to people who like post-apocalyptic. So when they buy, you know, other books, and then they buy your book appears in the also bots of those books. So that's kind of a good thing. I have a fairly provocative kind of title, Hell's Children. Yeah. I mean, even if you don't think it's something you want to read, you're going to click it to see just what the hell a book like that is called. So a little bit clickbaity in my mind, maybe some psychological edge there. Also, when I did my mark, I don't know how much, I don't know how many of your audience is trying to sell books or just like to read books. But I tried to make sure that I was doing something every day during the launch. So on one day, this person hit their list for me. That day, someone did a YouTube video talking to their little fans about it. On another day, somebody else hit their list about it. Another day, there were people spamming up their Facebook timeline for me. With a boosted post.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of people actually beyond the days that they said they were going to help me. I had people coming out of the woodwork saying, oh my God, I love that, you know, you're doing this and I'm going to hit my list for you. They just offered, which is really unusual because a list is sacred. You know, everybody wants to use your list. So who are these people volunteering? I don't know what it was, but yeah, they did, and I'm really grateful.
That's cool, man. So in terms of writing post-apocalyptic fiction, are you a post-apocalyptic reader generally?
When it's I mean, I used to read Deathlands by James Axler. I read The Road. I read Lucifer's Hammer.
Yeah.
I read Alas Babylon. I read One Second After. Now, I'm not as avid as as these people who bought my book.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just reading everything. So like my normal stuff to read these days, it's a lot of it really is. I mean, I read a lot of Robert B. Parker, obviously.
Yeah.
Elmore Leonard. I'm kind of doing a lot of the stuff that's sort of like gauged in more reality, as it were.
Yeah.
But I grew up reading sci-fi and fantasy, and I never read any of that quote unquote reality stuff, thrillers and things like that. So to me, that's all new.
One
of the things I did want to ask, and kind of comes back a little bit to what we were saying about poetic writing and sort of that kind of style, is in Hell's Children, you talk about weeds and you talk about cabbages. Isn't it? Weeds and cabbages.
That's right.
I really like the idea of using those two sort of ways of identifying people in a post-apocalyptic world. So weeds are the people that grow and flourish, if I'm correct. I might have got this wrong way around.
No, you got that right.
Yeah, cabbages are the people that are kind of just backwards and not going to make it. They're just the kind of idiots. Where did that come from? Was that something that, because it feels like for me, as I was reading it, it felt like something that maybe you'd taken from a part of your life that you'd had in the background, or was it just this seemed to fit with the story?
Well, again, I'm just impressed as hell that you've read my book. I mean, it's just neat.
I genuinely really enjoyed it. I've got it on my list to write up a proper review for you.
Okay. Well, you know, okay, so there's this whole concept of special snowflakes, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think we all know what that is now.
Yeah.
It's always in, you know, like I have to have a safe place. Beyond that, so that's sort of like, and you look back to Benjamin Franklin, who ran away from home at 14 because his dad would not let him start a business. So he runs away at 14. Okay, he's very much a weed, okay? Runs away at 14, and he goes and finds a printer who's too drunk to take care of his printing tasks. He's got to do all these pamphlets and everything. It's a true story. He did do this. And he, you know, he told the drunk printer, I'll run everything. You just be drunk. And so Benjamin Franklin eventually ended up making enough money to sort of buy out the business and start his own, you know, start changing the world. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then these days, you know, you get kids who they just play video games and, you know, hang out on a corner, sleep in the afternoon. They don't know a damn thing. They don't know anything.
Yeah.
They're overly sensitive. They cry when they're hurt.
We've got terrible, you know, terrible grip strength. I was reading the other day that the millennial generation has got like a third of the grip strength of their like fathers at that same age, because we never
That's
do
why
any
I struggle with the taps.
Yeah.
All right. So I won't belabor it too much, but I guess the idea was there was this character Jack, whose parents decided they actually were gonna, they were trying to have a kid, and they you know, they couldn't because they're too old. They're like late 50s, and they figured we're gonna have this kid, but he might not. We might not live past his 18th year because we're too old. And we might live to 80, but we won't be very useful. We won't have jobs. We don't want him sleeping on our couch. We want to make sure that he hits the ground running. He's prepared for the world, that he doesn't wait to 30 years old to find himself and decide what he wants to do.
Yeah.
So he gets his first job when he turns 11, sharpening knives, and learning how to do that. And I just, you know, if you ever read Angela's Ashes by Frank McCourt?
I've never read it.
I haven't, no.
Oh, it's incredible. It's about this teacher who grew up, he's a teacher. He wasn't a teacher as a child, but he was living in Ireland during all the famines and everything. And people are dying around him. His brother, they died of starvation, essentially starvation induced sickness. And then, you know, he would watch the adults of Limerick as they paraded through the streets on their coal carts every day to go to the mines.
I think I've seen the film, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he looked at them, and he was just this little kid, you know, going, oh, my God, I can't wait till I can get up there and be like the men and go to work every day. Now, can you imagine a kid these days looking at their parents and just daydreaming about going to work like dad or mom?
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine it now. It is interesting. It's almost like, is your book a rallying cry to get the kids of today to go to work? Is that?
Go to work, be better humans, you know, and I don't mean in the compassionate sense. You can be compassionate, you know, all your, this sort of separate. It's just, you know, don't be a cabbage. Don't be something that grows, that a farmer picks, and that, you know, rodents try to eat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Be a weed.
I do really like the idea that the, I don't really want to say it in case I kind of ruin it for people listening, but we'll just skip past that. Okay. Spoiler alert. But I really like the idea that during the whole of the book, you've got these characters that are being led by Jack into survival, and Jack is very much the kind of grown up in teenager form, but their whole objective tends to be going back towards, we must rebuild what came before. Whereas I think a lot of other post-apocalyptic stories tend to kind of go, we will build a new world, a better world in a different way. It feels like it's moving very much towards, we're going to get back what was taken, which I thought was quite a fresh look on how it could be.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. You do see that we're going to build a new utopia. We're going to do everything right. Jack's just thinking, how hard is it going to be without wool, you know, or without corn or chickens? Like that's something I'm struggling with book two. So here's a spoiler for you. He's concerned about chickens. They're completely unable to protect themselves. He can't imagine having he doesn't want to lose any of the wonders of civilization that can never be brought back. So imagine if a real post-apocalyptic scenario did happen and all these chickens out there in their coops, if the coop door is open, right, they'll live. But you know what happens is the skunks come in and kill them and the rats come in and kill them because they're unable to defend themselves. And so you would have, imagine, we can't live our modern society without eggs. Everything has eggs in it, you know? Mm. Even medicine has eggs in it. Eggs have eggs in it. You know, or cows. Cows are complete, you know, milk cows will just die if they ever get pregnant without a farmer to milk them. Mm. You know? Think about that.
Yeah. So we've been writing post-apocalyptic fiction. I've realized that now, I think once we finish these books, I'm going to be completely ready to take on the world if there is an apocalypse. Finding a similar sort of thing? Because like there are some blogs out there where it sounds like they are expecting this to happen. They're like planning the bug out bags, they've got guides on how to purify water and all this stuff. Are you doing that sort of level of research?
I actually live that life a little bit. I'm not going overboard. For me, it's a hobby. It's kind of a hobby. It's sort of philosophical hobby that actually could have practical implications. Mm. We have about a year's supply of food. I have a bag that I have to turn into a bug out bag, but it's, I just need to do that. I do feel that I need to do that. I have some radiation pills in case, there's ever a dirty bomb attack. I'll protect my thyroid. We have some antibiotics, which I need to kind of rotate. As you can see, I'm not a very good prepper, but I do think about it.
This has started to get me thinking more about it, and I am going to start building a bug out bag. I'm a big fan of like Michael Bunker as well, and looking at his plane lifestyle, I would never go that far, but it's just interesting.
He was
to
a
see
little bit the inspiration for my Lent as well.
Was he? Michael Bunker got you off mobile internet. He's on mobile internet all the time.
I love the idea that he just cuts most of it out and then goes to his shed to write.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. He's another friend of mine. Yeah.
You have to introduce us or we'll have a party sometime.
I'm actually going to probably be meeting him in April when I go to the Smarter Artist Summit. Are you guys going to it?
We'd love to, but how expensive would it be to get over there for us? Maybe next year we'll pay for our flights and tickets with our book sales next year.
This is the plan. Yeah, it'd be fantastic to see everyone.
I interrupted you, Daniel. I'm sorry about that.
Oh no, it was kind of coming back to the whole your friends thing. So I've seen a lot of you're a big advocate of other people, of other indie writers in promoting their work. You seem very generous and open with just helping people get out there, supporting other writers, and I think that's something that is very refreshing, because like you say, people can be very precious with their lists. People can be very focused on, I need to make my stuff work and I need to make my money. I need to do this. So, I mean, what is kind of behind your reasoning with your generosity?
Sure. What's going on there is it's actually a little bit selfish, even though it seems generous. When I was writing Kick and Fool's Ride and Hopper House, and I wasn't getting a lot of sales, I was frustrated, you know? So if I thought to myself, I can't seem to make my sales really pick up the way I'm hearing on the podcast, all these people who are just crushing it, you know, I'm going through the motions and stuff. So I said, well, what I'm going to do is if I can't help myself, I can help other people. And that it would give me that sense of motion that I'm not getting from my own work. So I would read books like Harvey Click's book or a Lindy Moon's book. She wrote Hyperlink from Hell, which is just a madcap mystery. And P.T. Hilton and all those guys are over on the left side of my blog, john-l-monk.com. I was reading all these indie authors, and just if I liked them, I would put like a little thing about their book on the left side of my blog so people could click on it and find the book themselves. Heck, and in the back of my Jenkins cycle, I have a number of the people on the left side in the back of the book so that they could go and buy the books. And it was just a way of like taking control of my lack of sales and success by taking control of their success. So I would promote them a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's the selfishness. It was sort of like I was like kind of like a brain hack a little bit to sort of make myself not feel like such a failure. But there was also like, I had like one little brain cell and scheming, conniving little brain cell in my head that said, aha, if they make it real big, then they can promote you, or, you know, or if, you know, whatever, you could learn from them or something like that. So it's like, there's no true altruism there. It probably isn't any true. I mean, I like it. I'm a human animal. I like helping my friends. I like seeing them succeed. But I think ultimately it was just an endorphin rush disguised as altruism.
Yeah. And that's what our podcast is.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. I knew it in many, many forms.
Yeah. So we've been going at it for a while. So we need to sort of speak. Is there any other questions you wanted to ask John, Dan, before we go into the quick fire round?
I got my key ones. I mean, I could talk for hours, but.
You've got one written here, and I'm not too sure what it means.
Which one?
Something about Google search.
Oh, so so when I was Googling your website earlier, on the top result of John L. Monk, it comes up with the phrase double space in the face. What does this mean?
It's actually double space in the face, S-A-S-E, SACE.
See, I didn't know whether to include that bit.
Yeah, so what that is, and I was thinking just yesterday I needed to take that down. I wrote I started the blog as a writing blog. So when you're writing, when you're writing books in the old days and you would submit them to agents, you had to make sure they were double spaced. You had to get them in their face, and you had to include a self-addressed stamped envelope, SACE.
They still teach that in some schools. I still see that quite a lot, because I was a proofreader for a couple of years, and people still do it.
What, still do double spacing or SACE? Oh, SACE. Okay.
The whole process is submitting to an editor. You got to do all this. Yeah, I need to take it down though. It's not a writing blog. It's really an announcement blog now. So
yeah.
You should change that to your, you know, what was the poetry line again? you need to really, you know,
people spark your
mind. That's the one. Yeah. You need to put your best line forward, I think. Okay, so we're going to jump into the quickfire round, John. We've got like 10 questions. We're going to fire them straight at you. Don't worry too much. Just you know, see what happens.
Go fast.
You get about like, we'll give you like 10 seconds to answer each one.
And you don't have to answer any if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Dan, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay,
so heaven or hell?
Heaven.
Co-writing or solo?
Solo.
Licorice or sherbet?
Licorice, because I'm a man.
I appreciate it, but when's your birthday?
March 6, 1971, which is also Michelangelo's birthday, though not in 1971.
Oh, so this Monday. Happy Monday, birthday
yeah.
for then.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
What was the last book you read?
Crap. it was a Robert B. Parker, Spencer book that I had somehow never read before. He has like 40 of them.
Cool.
I forget the name.
Favorite word?
Shit. I guess it's shit.
we'll take that. Least favorite Hobbit?
Oh, Mary. Yeah. don't like Mary, a doc.
Where do you shop?
Duluth. Recently, it's Duluth. They have the best stuff. It's super rugged.
I don't think we have one of those in Britain. Question number 9. What's up?
Just keeping it realsies.
Cool. And the last question, would you come back on the show? Please.
No. Yes, of course I would come back.
It's the first honest answer.
Yeah. Cool. So before we close up, where can we follow you, John, and your work?
John-L-Monk.com. Horrible domain name, but it will have anything new that I publish. You can friend me on Facebook. Just look for John L. Monk. I'm not on Twitter, and you can email me. If you go to my blog, you'll see like a contact page, and I have my email address there as a JPEG to stop like bots from picking it up.
Oh, interesting. Cool. So a quick thanks to Disasterpiece for the intro and outro music, Acast for hosting the podcast, the listeners for listening, the patrons for patroning, and to Dan, my co-host, for being here. And thanks again to John L. Monk. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much, John.
It's been great. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.